Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to talking about some Texans football. We've taken too long. I don't want to talk about no Aggies right now. I want to talk about no Astros right now, even though Astros do have a big game tonight. The biggest game in the city of Houston is this one. Texans.
You're darn right.
Bucks. Yeah. Monday Night Football, 6 p.m. You'll have pregame right here on Sports Radio 610 at 3. You'll have a pregame at 2 with the fellas of The Drive on a truncated show. All of that we've got. But what are the big questions that you're looking at? Because I found myself this morning, John Lopez, when I woke up, not getting up and brush my teeth, not going and doing my daily movements, right? Sorry, I shouldn't say that at noontime. You're eating lunch and everything. That was just nice. My brain was like, this is a nice way of saying
the movements he's making.
I hope he's talking about jogging.
Let me get that shake weight going.
I wasn't. That was the nicest way I could put it. Yeah. But like the first thing I thought about was I started asking myself questions about this game. And so 713-572-4610, if you want to add in to these questions, and obviously the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers live streams are both available for you there. But I kind of want to just run through these in, to be honest, a kind of free-form way and see if we get to some of these. One of the first ones that came to mind was, of course, the one that that our guy, B. Scott, brought to the table on Friday, which is, will the Texans run outside? Like, are they going to truly exhibit themselves, or display themselves, rather, as the game plan offense that they purported themselves to be? Because part of the game plan would have to be, if you're looking at where do we attack this Buccaneers defense, especially if you're going to be a run forward, it's not running at Vita Veyer. It's not running at the big boy in the middle. It's running towards the outside where they've where teams have had more success last year and seemingly early on the Falcons did last week as well. More to the outside and less to the interior, which is diametrically opposite to what the Texans seem to want to do, running between the tackles downhill. I wonder, will they shift that, or will they try and kind of, in a, and this maybe isn't fair, but run themselves into a brick wall consistently?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the answer, sorry, I think they're gonna try some, you know, outside the tackles is what you're talking about, but I don't think so. And part of it is not just, oh, you're not really a game plan offense. You know, the weakness might be on the outside. No, I think the way they're built and more runs for Nick Chubb, that's an inside guy. That's a between the tackles running back. So I think if Nick Chubb gets more carries, you're going to see more carries between the tackles. I don't think they're going to go outside as much running the ball.
But Nick Chubb does have, which is funny, because, of course, we would attribute this to Joe Mixon, who, hey, buddy, hope you're doing well. That's what D'Amico basically said.
Yeah.
He actually tracks more as the guy probably in this running back room that has the most vision, that knows how to read blocks. He did do that well week one, reading the blocks. I do think you can trust him to get to the outside. Now, the explosion isn't there.
Outside or call the play, you know, on a stretch type play. I think get to the outside is a different thing.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. And also, sometimes if you're trying to block it up the middle and everybody's there, maybe that
got
to
bounce.
Maybe that's more opportunity to bounce than if you actually try and run off tackle, which they did a little bit from time to time. But I'm interested to see what the running attack just looks like in general, because obviously I could talk about where they run the football, but the question also pops up, who they run with the football.
Yeah, no, and I think that's why I would lean toward, if they change anything up, and I know we're going to get to some other questions here that are going to address this, but if they change anything up, I don't think it's going to necessarily be the run game strategy.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I have, and again, feel free to throw any in here. This is real freeform off my brain. Will the Texans trust the youth? Is week two when they do it? Because week one was very clearly, we are trusting the experience that we have here, both out the gate and then even more so as time went. Mm-hmm. Justin Watson ended up with a lot of routes. And I don't think that I don't think they were wrong for doing that, because you saw him run clinical routes that ended up, you know, getting a few holding calls and penalties in the secondary. So it's not like utilizing him more was a problem. However, the upside players are Jalen Knoll, right? The upside players are maybe some Woody Marks in here. And so will they utilize some more in a home opportunity where maybe this is a little bit more of a controlled environment, more of your youth, in order to see maybe the possibility of some explosive plays and an opportunity to really get at the middle of the field possibly?
And that's where I will say yes. I think this is something that almost out of necessity when you think about it. First of all, Christian Kirk, who you were figuring to rely on heavily, is out again.
And as well as Braxton Berrios.
As well as Braxton Berrios. So if Christian Kirk presumably gets back next week, you know, he's going to be a big part of the offense. So if not now, when? If not now, you
week
know,
six.
Trusting Jaden Higgins and or Jalen Noel or whatever to get a little bit of the attention and more touches for Nico Collins, then when are you going to do it? I think that is – I have a hunch the Texans are going to add a little bit more downfield in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel it. Simply because of how bad they were otherwise and trying to get in the end zone and Nico Collins' lack of touches. So I do think, yes, that's something we will see.
That's actually one of those that I had on here. How and how much will Nico be involved? How much is clearly – I think if you simplify the answer to more, I think that is correct. Nick Caley mentioned that in his availability. We've heard it from various different – I think CJ mentioned it. Don't worry about it. He will get involved, as if to say, hey, like, don't even waste your breath. Yeah. We know it'll happen. I'm interested in how, because he could easily be an outside guy and just kind of allow him to continue to be that big X that we know he's capable of being. Are they going to move him around?
I think so.
Because I know that the Bucs are more static in the way. I mean, we've seen the Texans be this more in the past. More recently, and I think like midway or maybe even a little earlier through last year, we saw them trustingly enough in the Kamari Lassiter to kind of feel like they could play man and stick Stingley on the best receiver and move around.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Bucs are wanting to do that. So will you have some instances where you'll see Nico Collins move around a good amount and maybe get some slot opportunities to possibly break him open in a similar way that we saw Davante Adams get moved around?
I wouldn't be surprised if the first play of the game is some sort of shot or at least target of Nico Collins. And then what you just said I think is the most important thing. This is a team – it's not like they're running the wishbone here. You know, they do have a lot of emotion. They do have a lot of trying to get the matchups, the game plan offense, and that's where it's going to come in, getting Nico either inside, on the move, you know, dragging as an area is cleared, one of those things. Absolutely, I expect that as well.
Some other questions that at least I have. Again, 713-572-4610, where a question said, does Joe Mixon have gangrene? I don't
gangrene.
Know. But I like you just kind of venturing a guess as to what might be happening in that space. Again, we won't know until they let us know when it's time to let us know.
He might got the cooties. Oh, we know.
Ooh, you know, I've heard the cooties are really bad this year. You got to really work on your cootie shot. They've gotten the upgraded edition of it, so really check in with your niece or your niece will probably be the one who knows what's happening with the cootie shots. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that it's all nieces in Houston that were the ones that the CDC trusted with the cootie shot information. Will they corral Baker? Baker Mayfield is a man that has some mobility to him. And I'm interested to see, because we know that the pressure will be there. The Atlanta Falcons, mind you, on Sunday, it looks like they actually have some pass rush for the first time in a number of years. And they were able to give Baker a little bit of hell, but not as much. And so I wonder, will, in addition to adding pressure that we know, 51 and 55, that's Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, will apply to the quarterback? Will they also be good at keeping him in the pocket or at least keeping him from scrambling, utilizing one of his better features, which is kind of creating the chaos with his legs?
Yeah, and that's that's one that's going to be a little bit of a gray area. Yes, they're going to bring pressure and pressure Baker Mayfield. They just do because they're really good at it. But how much and how effective is he going to be? Because one thing he did really well in week one was get rid of the ball very quickly. And you know that they're going to be doing much the same thing. So is that 5 pressures and 2 sacks? I'll take that. Or is it, you know, no sacks but a lot of pressures because he's getting rid of the ball? You know what I mean?
Which of those would you prefer, actually?
I want the sacks. I want the negative plays or more than 2 sacks, to be honest. But I know they're going to bring the pressure and they're going to get to Baker Mayfield's vicinity, but he is so good at either maneuvering or getting rid
escaping,
of it quickly.
Yeah.
And to that end, actually, interestingly enough, this question popped up as I was looking at some statistics. You know me. The Bucs made a lot of hay against Atlanta in week one on deep shots. Mm-hmm. They were probably in the 20s when it comes to short passing. They were in the, you know, 20s, high 20s when it came to intermediate passing. They were top 5 memory serves week one in deep shots. Is that a pro or con versus Houston?
Oh, that's...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Con. For sure. Not, maybe not in the corners. Maybe not with the help from the safety, but you know, the way they made it, they have a smart offense that they run. Baker Mayfield runs it very well, gets rid of the ball very quickly. That is absolutely going to be one of the big tests that the Bucs offer is how they match up. We saw what happened.
Let's try to find Jalen Petrie.
Jalen Petrie and the safeties. That's exactly what I was going to say.
But that's going to be more intermediate. Like, I feel like when you talk about deep passing.
Yeah, but it turns into 25 yards.
Yeah, and they got a lot of receivers, too. It's only two Kamaris and Stingleys.
They're looking for yards after catch against Petrie, against the safeties in the middle, whatever it may be, maybe even some tight ends. Etc. That's where it gets interesting.
So from my thought, the deep passing element is twofold. Really, it's one of those things that kind of tags back to last year with this Texans team when it came to the big play opportunities that seemingly happened. It was one of the few flaws that you looked at with what is a really, really good D'Amico Ryans led, Matt Burke led defense. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that maybe could take advantage of that. However, are they going to be able to do that if Daniil and Will are able to get home in a way that maybe it was harder for them to do because Matt Stafford was really, really good at being on his P's and Q's, getting the ball out. He was very, very good at staying on track. I don't know if Baker's going to be exactly to that same level of meticulous quarterback. And so are you able to get pressure that makes it harder for them to get the ball out? And then you end up with Ball Hawk, Kalen Bullock, Ball Hawk, Stingley, Ball Hawk, Kamari Lassiter, and then you end up in a place where maybe you get more turnovers.
Yeah, and you touched on something that I think is very important. This Falcons defense looks pretty good.
Yes.
Especially if you base it on last night. By the way, their run game looks pretty good, too, and the Bucs go to the other side of the ball. The Bucs shut Bijan down a little bit last week. So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of looking at this game from a different perspective. But back to my first point, like this defense, you know, can look pretty good, and they didn't get to Tampa nearly as much as they did last night with J.J. McCarthy.
No.
So there's that.
Although J.J. McCarthy, he looked a little frazzled himself.
Yeah.
That was a weird quarterback game. We don't need to talk about that this moment, but Penix, J.J. McCarthy, all I was thinking was, why did an NBC execs do this? Because this was all, you know how sometimes you put up a quarterback matchup and you're like, all right, we're going to see this one, and then it doesn't turn out how you want it. You go, damn, we wish we hadn't put that. That's exactly what I expected that to look like. You could have called that.
It lived up to that hype.
Yeah, they did.
You could have called that coming in. All right, another question that I have for the Texans here as they head into this big-time Week 2 matchup versus the Bucs. Is Ed Ingram worth all the uproar?
Ooh.
Because we were having a lot of conversation about the shuffle, and I understand that's not inherently about Ed Ingram himself. It's more about having guys in the roles that they had been doing most headed in. Mm-hmm. However, there is a nugget of that, which is about Ed Ingram playing right guard, and he is healthy enough to do that. I think that is what you should expect. You should expect the offensive line, rather, that was expected before we found out the abdomen injury would keep Ed Ingram out. Is he worth it? Because he was on a Viking. He was not good on the Vikings last year at playing guard, and we're hoping that he's come in and with, you know, the better blocking and technique and, you know, his, you know, system, he will be better. However, what happens if he's not?
Oh, I think it's on the table because we don't know. This offensive line was not good last week. We know that. They gave up so much pressure and didn't really get the push you wanted, et cetera. The only hope you have right now is even if Ed Ingram is just solid, at least you have Tytus Howard and Tay Ursary back at the tackle position. So that's where you're going to – and I mentioned this earlier. This is the first time we're going to see this line in a real game. So we don't know anything about it, and especially against a pretty dang good defense, it's going to make it – very interesting. We're not going to be necessarily sitting here, you know, tomorrow saying, "Oh, Ed Ingram, he didn't look good." I think it's going to have to do how he's affecting.
I sure hope not.
How he's affecting the entire line.
I sure hope he's not. We're not saying that because I don't think that that's out of the question by any means that we end up in that place. I do hear you though.
Having Tay affects the whole line. Yeah,
having Tay set where he needs to be, hopefully with a little bit more confidence and a little bit more consistency than he showed in week one, because there was some flubs where, you know, we talk about the offensive line being five fingers in a glove or, you know, a weakest link proposition. Yeah. And there were some times last week where true to being a rookie, Arriante Ursary was the weak link that allowed something to stop. I think of the 0-yard run from Woody Marks,
right,
where there's Jared Verse in the back, in the backfield, and it's because Tay slips on a block that he's supposed to get out there on the right side. If he finds a little bit more of that consistently, it looks good. Plus, going up against these outside linebackers of the Atlanta Falcons, they're good. However, I do think that you can actually, you have the strength and you have the size to maybe be able to muscle them on the outside. So hopefully that happens. How about this as a question? What does tight end usage look like?
Ooh, $1 million
question. No Cade Stover. Right, and Cade Stover was a lot of lead blocking, I guess, for lack of a better term, on some of these inside zone plays that the Texans were running out here. You have Harrison Bryant, who is now on the 53-man roster, but he profiles more as a pass catcher. What does it look like? Do we see the same as usual with just, you know, the same guys, or rather with Bryant stepping in for some of the Cade Stover?
Mm-hmm.
Do we see more Jakob Johnson or British Brooks usage, depending on which of those guys get, whether it's Brooks being a healthy scratch again and Jakob Johnson being called up, or do they go with the Brooks normally? Is there even more 11 personnel where you really do have three wide receivers? What does the tight end usage kind of look like?
Yeah, I think that's the $1 million question, and I don't expect tight end usage to be certainly not as significant, even though they love tight ends, as last week, where you had Dalton Schultz getting targets and blocks, and same thing with Cade Stover, simply because I don't know how much they trust that versus how much they trust maybe the receivers and having three wide receivers and such. It's going to be really interesting, you know, to see what Bryant can do and how they use him. But it is one of the definite things to keep an eye on, is how they break down these tight ends.
This is an interesting question from the 972. They actually just have these requests for the offense. Mm-hmm. Spread the field and get easy underneath throws, which I think should be there, including screens. And maybe that's how you get number 14 involved, Jalen Noel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a screen and let him use that speed with the big body, see if that helps in the same way that we saw in the preseason. But then also they said, add some read option to make them respect CJ's run ability.
Yeah.
Do you want to do intentional run, quarterback run? Because he did a great job of scrambling, but that's asking for another level of this.
Part of my hesitance, I don't see them doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't mind the idea, but I just don't see them doing that. I think they're going to, in the run game and with CJ Stroud, I think they're going to stay true to themselves. But as I mentioned earlier, I think they are going to add a few wrinkles in the passing game. That's where it's going to be, and that's why I hesitated on the tight end, too. I think it's going to be very wide receiver focused.
All right, my final question here that I'm kind of thinking about as we're heading towards Texans Bucks tonight: does the opposing quarterback NRG effect remain in 2025? It's one of those things that it started as this is odd that this is happening with some quarterbacks, and then we looked at it all the way across the season, and there was clearly something there where you have Josh Allen come in and not look like himself. You have Jared Goff come in and throw 5 interceptions at NRG Stadium. Does that remain? Because there's a few factors to that. There's obviously this Texans defense and what it looks like in the secondary, which week one, they kind of got abused by Matt Stafford in some ways. Obviously, you still had a good defense. I don't want to try and overstate that. But then also, are you going to be able to add pressure to Baker Mayfield? And what does it look like at kickoff? Like, are you able to get people in? And does the Liberty wide out in the start of the season? Do you have the same energy in that stadium that I think helped make it tough on opposing quarterbacks in that building?
Yeah, I do expect the defense to really step up and be the decide. We're going to be talking a lot about the offense tomorrow just because of what happened in week one. But I think the story in terms of, you know, how you win this game, if you win this game, is going to be the defense. They really, really feed off the home crowd, whether it's there or not in the early going.
Because I could easily see this going either way. I could see Baker Mayfield looking flustered under pressure, throwing up ill-advised footballs, as he is wont to do, mind you. He threw 16 interceptions last year.
Yeah, that's the thing with Baker, man. As good as he's been over the past couple years, when he's bad, he is bad.
I heard Seth mentioning this, and he's absolutely right. I think this is a rite of passage to be a Bucs quarterback in the modern era, which is, Jameis Winston, you might be able to throw 5 or 6 touchdowns, but you could also very much well throw 4 or 5 interceptions, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah, the interceptions are possible, and I think that's also similar with Baker. But I also, and I hate to, you know, remind you of this, I could easily see this being like pseudo Will Levis, where it's just like, why is he getting that ball off, and why is he getting behind this defense?
How did that happen?
Or sometimes he could be at like 118 passing yards, and then just that final drive, he just make a big throw that win the
game.
That's
him, though.
That's him. Yeah, that's what you get from him.
Yeah.
So all of these questions and more are on the table for the Houston Texans, and I want to see how many of these they answer on that field, and that's the goal. That's the important part, and that's part of having the expectations of the team, the type of team that this team is now. So let's see it. 6 p.m. NRG Stadium. Have your white on for the Liberty whiteout and get out there early. Be loud, because you can help, I guess, with that last one at the very least.
Yeah.
For your Houston Texans as they take on the Bucks. All right, you're in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to our lunchtime confessions, as we always do, right here on Sports Radio 610.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.